Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to CUTV News Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you. And not only that, I'm excited because Donna Carlin is back with us. For those of you who heard our broadcast with Jim Masters last week, you know how dynamic this lady is and how she helps people. It's pretty remarkable. She is a global leadership coach. We talk to a lot of leadership coaches, but not many who are global. She's an author, and she's the shadow coach. Donna Carlin is what she's called. She has a 35-year track record of helping people become remarkable. And she is the founder, by the way, and the president of the No Ceiling, Just Sky Institute, which is an absolutely fabulous name for an institute that helps people. You may wonder why that name. And she says it's because there is no ceiling, it's just sky. When she wants to help people, and when she does help people, she does everything she can to help them remove whatever roadblocks are in the way of helping them evolve and to grow. There are no barriers, no assumptions, no roadblocks, no programs that stand in the way. And as she points out, it's time you, if you're her client, wrote your own story rather than adopt someone else's of you. And she is going to make it a bestseller. She says, people become who they might be when they let go of who they are. It's a pretty remarkable story, and as you know, she was fascinating last week. She wants to help people, and that's why we've got her back again with us. So let me bring Donna back on the line with us with not a whole lot of introduction, because you've done this before. Donna, welcome. Donna, by the way, is based in Ottawa in Ontario, so she's in Canada, and we're here. And Donna, it's nice to welcome you back to CUTV News Radio. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's early in the morning, I know, wherever, but it's great to have you back again. Do me a favor. Tell me a little bit about the kind of people that you primarily help. Are they CEO, high-level CEO level, executives, or are they people up and down the scale of the corporate ladder?
They're predominantly CEOs and heads of organizations, leadership teams, the executive cadre. However, I do work with high potentials, people who are identified as future leaders of an organization. I also work with entrepreneurs and people with great ideas who want to formalize them. So it's not really up and down the ladder. It's high-level cadre and those entrepreneurial-like businesses that really are getting off the ground. I also work, by the way, with high levels in military, governments, political systems, so it's both public and private sector.
You know, I know you've been doing this now for 35 years. It comes to mind that you were kind of an early adopter of this coaching field, which has become so big now and so popular. As I pointed out many times, you know, the CEO of Google admits he has a coach and refers to his coach a lot and depends on him. And I've often said if it's good enough for the CEO of Google, it'd be good enough for all of us. But you were doing this kind of thing before a lot of people even were aware that coaching was becoming a profession. Am I right on that?
Absolutely, you're right. And what was really funny was when I did my master's degree in organizational psychology with a focus in executive coaching, when I walked into the first day of that master's program, the president of the school said to me, like, what are you doing here? Because we're actually using your model to teach for our observational piece, and you'll be teaching it. And I just started laughing because we were sort of growing concurrently, the field and the model that I created over time and am now teaching around the world. So it really evolved. It went from organizational psychology, pieces of psychology, training and development, all the terms that were out there many, many years ago, which sort of condensed and created a new field in coaching and executive coaching.
What was it that got you so interested in doing this? When you started your career, what did you want to do? Where were you headed in the beginning? Do you remember?
Oh, absolutely. I was in a totally different field. And my son, when he was born, he had many medical issues that needed to be addressed. And he was the first patient in the world to have them addressed. So we went with this surgeon who was doing experimental, you know, work as a fellow in a hospital, and we had to evolve with her as her technique grew. In year two of that, which is now close to 37 years ago when it started, so 35 years ago, she looked at me before she operated on my son and said, "You will be working with all my future patients." And we fought for a while. And she said, "You don't take off the surgeon who's going to have a scalpel over your son in an hour." So we talked about it after the surgery, which meant I had to go back to school. I needed to be retrained completely. It was a totally different field for me. And it started off me working with long-term care patients, families of terminally ill cancer kids. It was a very different area and eventually evolved into, you know, how could policy support long-term care patients, people dealing with intense trauma, how is that applicable within task forces, really traumatic environments and very high-paced environments like task forces and medical emergency response centers, and then eventually evolved into, well, how does that support organizations? How do I take some of the models I'm using within governments, political systems, military, and bring that into mainstream world? And so that's how it continued to evolve. I kept going back to school to get different trainings and different degrees so that I could really take a 360 approach to people and organizational development.
Well, that's pretty remarkable. You've done it a lot of different things. How did you create your No Ceiling, Just Sky Institute? When did that happen? How long has that been, you know, in existence, put it that way?
That is fairly new, actually, because my practice is under the umbrella of A Better Perspective, which is the executive coaching and training, and I have a school that I run that I teach, as I said, my model around the world, which is the School of Shadow Coaching. And working with my strategist, who's an amazing woman, we decided that we needed to pull everything together. So actually this year, we created the No Ceiling, Just Sky Institute. That has always been my tagline for A Better Perspective. And she said, "But that's everything that you do." And she's right. Everything I do is to help people remove any roadblocks that might be in their way to succeed. So we decided to create the institute and have that as the umbrella organization that pulls all the work that I do, and there's many hats involved in that, underneath that umbrella. So if a client comes to me and says, "I'm here, this is what I want to be doing or my organization to be doing," we literally co-create the intervention necessary in pulling all the different pieces of the puzzle from the various organizations that's under the institute.
I'm prompted to ask you, how many people are involved in this institute? I mean, you are so well known. You are you're the face of this, so to speak. But do you have a lot of coaches and people who work with you in this arena?
I have people with unique experiences, not necessarily
right.
coaches. So I bring the coaching
okay.
psychology to the piece, organizational okay. psychology. I have multiple of ex-military people from the highest level within the military realm, working within the corporate environment now, taking the tactical approach to the environmental corporate environment. So I draw from them depending on what the issues are, and they help me with larger group work and interventions. Then I have some ex-diplomats who are phenomenal in the communication realm, in the languaging, in the organizational design at a global level. So I bring them in when necessary. And then the work that I do with the fellows, and like meaning the TED World, Starting Block, and Unreasonable Institute, those are my babies because that to me is play, not necessarily work. So I do that exclusively. And it's pro bono work. But, you know, those are the game changers of the world. So I will continue to work with them no matter what.
You know, you do so many things, and you are so well known for doing this. I've pointed out you are world-renowned, a world-renowned pioneer in leadership coaching. I don't want to put you on the spot, but how do you think you've become so well known in this field that your name is known in, you know, areas in other countries all around the world? What have you done that has just turned everybody on to your teachings and your coaching abilities? How have you done this? I guess that's the question.
You know, I look back and like over my career, and I'm sometimes amazed at where I've come over the years. I think part of it is I continuously challenge the status quo. And I do that with my clients. Why not do it with the industry as a whole? I mean, for years, coaching was done over the phone. It was regularly scheduled meetings. And I continuously said, are clients getting what they need or what they think they could get? Because for the most part, they knew that they would be on the phone. They would be sharing things. Yes, they would get some movement, some insight, some direction. But that wasn't, as far as I was concerned, aligning with what people's lives are. Because I maintain, is your life scheduled in 45-minute increments over a week? I don't know about you, but I don't know one person who doesn't have a curveball thrown at them where, you know, their worlds turn upside down. Do I want to be speaking with them based on what happened last week? Well, a lot happens within a week. So I want to be there. I want to be there in real time, whether it's 2 days, whether it's an hour, whether it's, you know, a series of days over a period of time. I want to see everything that happens. So because I'm there and I see the context and the content and the environment, they work on things that weren't even in their awareness when we first started working. So even my contracts talk about being, like what I'm going to be doing with them is including but not limited to, because I think I'm successful because I see well more than what they're aware of. And I see them in the context of where they're unbelievably remarkable and they didn't pay attention to it, so they can't repeat it. That's why I think I'm successful, because there as a partner in crime, period.
You just opened up a whole new world, because we talk to a lot of coaches. I've talked to tons of coaches. But what you're saying is you actually go to the client and you're spending time with the client in person. Is that right?
Absolutely. Unless it's a bombing zone or a war zone or something like that, you know, post-earthquake or, you know, tsunami, that
no.
kind of thing. No,
okay.
I don't necessarily go where my clients are. But I do know how they think. I have observed them in real time. So I could really work with them in such a deep way, because they know that I'm picking everything up, not just what they're sharing with me.
Well, you see, this is a whole different ballgame as far as I'm concerned. I don't know of any coaches who do this. Now, if you're working with high-level executives, as you pointed out, CEO-level executives, and you go to spend time with them at their corporate headquarters, and you're in the offices, do you spend the day with them, watch them in meetings, observe them as they're carrying on their work as the CEO and with their, you know, with their staff members? You're observing all this, right?
Absolutely. I'm observing how effective they are, what their communication style is, are they growing their people or demolishing their people, what is it that they need to change in their demeanor, what is it they have to change in how they think, are they thinking in an antiquated way, are they looking in the rearview mirror at, you know, past successes. You know, if you drive a car looking through a rearview mirror, you're going to crash and burn. Same thing happens in this day and age. If you don't look forward and make changes in the present based on where you want to go and reverse engineer that, which is some of what I do, then you're going to be in trouble. So I need to see everything that's going on. And, you know, seriously, people ignore me after 10 minutes. And it's really hard when they look at me initially. I have, you know, red hair, curly, massive red hair, and they say, sure, I'm going to ignore you. Like, that's not happening. But really, because of the intensity of what goes on in an organization, when they're used to seeing me around and, you know, wandering in the halls and in and out of offices and meetings, they just know that I'm a fly on the wall and just, you know, leave her be kind of thing. Sometimes I'm asked for my opinion, and most of the time I'll say, sorry, but that's not what I'm here for. I'm not there to dictate what they do. I'm there to help them see what they do and make changes that will serve them.
And typically, how long will you spend with a client? Is it 2-3 days? Would that be essentially it? And that's all you need?
It depends. Sometimes, you know, I have literally evolved a young woman who was an entry-level director from an entry-level director to a chief of staff position after working with her for 3 days. Because of the changes that she made in her leadership style and her interaction and how she communicated with upper-level management, she was able to evolve within 6 months to a very high position in the organization. It all depends. Some people are continuously dealing with traumatic circumstances or multiple acquisitions. Therefore, the equilibrium of an organization has been shaken. So I'm in and out, you know, 2-3 days a month, interspersed with phone calls, emails, messaging, whatever it takes to help them evolve. So it could be as small as a few hours to help somebody get a contract that will, you know, evolve their organization financially, to a year or more, depending on, you know, what their role is and what they need to have done.
This is pretty remarkable. I'm also prompted to ask you, what about men versus women? Do you find yourself working a lot more with women now than with men? One would assume initially it probably was mostly men that you worked with, but what about now? Women are making so much inroads into the upper echelons of the corporate arena. Do you work with a lot of women as well?
I work with women. Like, if you're asking me the proportion men to women, it's still much higher men because
Right. Senior
leadership is much higher percentage than women in senior leadership positions. But I work with both, and it's more based on what the needs are rather than the gender of the individual. And again, what I bring to the table specific to what it is they want to accomplish is more the fit than anything else.
Do people know what they want when they call you in, or are they looking for advice on how to get beyond where they are? Do they know exactly? I mean, are they calling you and say, look, this is what I want to know. I want to get here. You help me get there to a specific spot. Is that the way it works?
It depends, again, on who I'm dealing with. If I'm dealing with an entrepreneur or a small business that's trying to get a huge contract, they're going to call me in to help them determine what their point of distinction is. So, as I say, they're not the best. They're the only. They are able to position themselves to the people that they're approaching for those, you know, supportive contracts so that it's a no-brainer that they would hire them. And, you know, some of my biggest successes are in that realm. For some people, it's, I want to evolve into a senior leadership position, like a real senior position, CEO, whatever it is, chief financial officer. I'm not quite sure what's stopping me from getting there. So it's a matter of determining what those roadblocks are, how they stand in their own way, and to really help them remove the impressions, the programs they have of themselves, to really be able to evolve into that kind of position, what their presence is, their leadership presence, the whole bit. Most of the time, they have no idea why they're not there. I was working with this woman who was a woman engineer, I would say about a couple months ago, and she looked at me and she said, like I had met her for the first time, she said, I've been here for 22 years, I always get the job done. And if the staff doesn't get it done, I make sure it's finished so it always meets the deadline. And I've been in this position for 22 years. And I looked at her and I said, that's because you're not leading, you're doing. Why would they want a leader who's letting everybody slack off? And that's what you're doing. If you're helping everybody else meet their deadlines by completing the work for them, you're not leading them. You're just fixing everything. And that's not what a leadership, person in leadership does. And she looked at me and she said, oh, my goodness, I never realized that was what was happening. And I said, it's time to flip the baton back to the staff and make sure that they do what they need to get done and evolve them and grow them, and then you might have a shot at this. So that was one conversation. I met her at a workshop I did for women engineers, and she wrote me back saying, I've totally changed my approach now. I'm not going to be doing things for other people. So there you go. It all depends on what the situation is, and, you know, we dive in and co-create it together.
And when you spend a day with a client, then what happens? You, I guess at the end of the day, you sit down with them and start giving them your report card on their performance, I guess, would be an appropriate way to put it. And did they take your advice to heart? Are they, you know, I would imagine sometimes you're telling them things they don't want to hear.
I'm quite diplomatic, although very direct in what I share with somebody, because I have to accept all of who a person is, not just certain parts of them. I'm working with an entire human being, and that's not so easy. So when we look at the feedback, so it could be if we're alone in an elevator, for example, I will ask them two or three questions to get their awareness honed. So they bring those questions to the next part of the meeting. If I'm with a woman or in the washroom and there's nobody there, I'll ask them questions. We take whatever place or opportunity there is for those, you know, quick laser questions. If they're making a decision or determination based on an assumption, they need to know that it's an assumption. My question might be assumption or fact. And they just look at, you know, what they had stated or decided or, you know, their perspective on something, and they go, you're right, I need to validate that before I make a decision because that could come back to haunt me. So, again, it's throwing in those laser questions more than advice to help them have clarity, introduce paradoxes, whatever is necessary for them to have honed awareness of them within the context of what they're doing or living at the time. So at the end of the day, hopefully we have a chunk of time where we process what happened through the day. What I do is document little snippets of moments in time that reflect and give examples of what I want to find out more of. So again, it's through inquiry. It's through contextualizing. It's saying, this just occurred. Did you realize how amazing this was? Most of the time the answer is no. And so we go and take a deep dive into what just happened that was so amazing that if they reproduced it in other contexts, they would continue to evolve. In other states is, how often do you make assumptions and what are they based on? Past experience, your own fears and insecurities, what is it? So for them to be so aware of what they filter their decisions or comments through that they don't do it again if it doesn't serve them. So it's a continuous, constant self-awareness within what is necessary in their environment. And they continue just to grow and be so honed in on who they are and how they approach things that I'm able to start backing off and they take on more of their self-shadowing in a way.
You're remarkable. And I'm looking at this slogan you've created, which is obviously what you were just talking about. You said people become who they might be when they let go of who they are. And that's what you're trying to help them do, isn't it?
Exactly. We all have our own insecurities. I mean, the shadow work that I do is twofold, right? It's the shadowing and the observation of an individual over a period of time, so I get a real sense of who they are and what they're doing and how they do it, obviously. Then there's the shadow, the Jungian archetype of shadow, which is everything from your deepest, darkest side of your psyche that you're so uncomfortable with that you try to shove it away, to your hidden potential or that which you have not yet lived. And to help either face your shadow and not let it totally overwhelm you, to adopt some of this new found potential that is no longer hidden, to integrate that into, you know, your life. So the only way to do that is to stop putting limitations on yourself. You know, people always don't ever reach their limits. They only think they do. And some of the biggest roadblocks is when somebody gets a promotion or, you know, evolves to a certain level, and they'll look at me and say, I never thought I would get this far. I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. My goal is to make them not self-sabotage and to say, you got this far. Who's to say, other than you, that you can't get further? And to help them see why they're putting those limitations on themselves. The higher up you get, the scarier it is for some people. Now you have a broader responsibility for more people, for the success of an organization or your own business, whatever it is. So to be able to, you know, face that head on is huge.
It's interesting. You have said that your clients would call you a troublemaker or a pot stirrer. But you don't agree with that, right?
Of course I'm a troublemaker. Because, you know, when you stir the pot with somebody and you help them and almost make them see different sides to themselves, it's not easy. So that causes a little bit of trouble in their lives. Not trouble that gets them into trouble, but pot stir, just to give you a little background for that, when I was creating my profile for the TED world, I was trying to figure out how to frame this, and I asked somebody that I work with in that environment, what would you call what I do? And he looked at me. He said, you are a pot stirrer. I said, I know what that means. He said, no. You take all these perspectives, like flavors, as if you were cooking. You throw them in the pot. You stir them around so they're no longer where they used to be, and something new emerges, a whole new flavor. That's exactly what you do with people. It's exactly what you do with organizations. So I agree with his interpretation of pot stir, which is why I kept it there.
That's good. That's great. I want to point out, we're talking with Donna Carlin. She has a fabulous two websites, quite frankly. And let me give you these, because if you're interested in what Donna is doing and the way she works, you will love looking at these websites. The first you should refer to is DonnaCarlin.com. It's Donna, D-O-N-N-A, Carlin, K-A-R-L-I-N.com. And then go look up on the website, No Ceiling, Just SkyInstitute.com. No Ceiling, Just SkyInstitute.com. There is a wealth of information there that will really give you information about what Donna does and how she works. And boy, I'm telling you, if you're interested in improving your situation in life, Donna is someone you should definitely consider talking to. Donna, what's in the future for you? You've done so much. Where are you headed now?
We'll be launching a series of workshops to help businesses and people find their point of distinction, their personal and organizational brand, so they're not the best, they're the only. Another workshop will be tested and tried and true 5-step process to accelerate your career, to really look at how to get there and to get there in an orchestrated way. We'll continue working within larger organizations to help high potentials achieve their level of excellence, but what we're going to be doing more of is to help organizations hire based on fit as well as skill sets and experience. We have a unique way of doing that to look at how people operate, their personal operating system, in other words, how they approach everything, so we'll be doing more of that as well. And there's another book in the works that I'm very excited about around boundaries, especially when you're not the boss. So that'll be coming out hopefully beginning of the new year. So lots on my plate, but always good stuff.
You are a busy lady. What about books that are on the market right now? If somebody wanted to, you know, look at one of your books.
The latest one in print is Leaders, Their Stories, Their Words, Conversations with Human-Based Leaders, some amazing leaders in various fields, and their stories of how they got to where they are and how they're going to impact the next wave. And there's an e-book through BookBoon called The Power of Coaching, Don't Give Up Your Day Job, or Should You?, for people looking at going into this field. And that they could download online.
Wow. Sounds fascinating. Donna, it's absolutely been delightful to have you as a guest. I told you we were going to run out of time, and you'd be amazed when the time ran out. We have. But, again, thank you for taking the time to chat with us out of your very, very busy schedule. Again, our guest has been Donna Carlin. She's based in Ontario, Canada, but you'll work with people wherever they are. It doesn't matter. The borders don't matter, do they?
No, they don't.
Okay. Donna, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure having you here, and that'll do it for this edition of CUTV News Radio. I'm Doug Llewellyn, everybody, and one more time, here's the website to get information on Donna, DonnaCarlin.com, and Carlin is K-A-R-L-I-N, and there's also the No Ceiling, Just Sky Institute.com. Refer to those websites, and you'll get a wealth of information on what Donna does. Thanks very much for being with us. See you next time right here on Close Up Talk Radio. And we've enjoyed having you with us. Bye for now. Have a great day, everybody, wherever you are. It's been a delight having you here. Bye for now.